This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 303. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is good. Just another day in paradise on the Tool Shed pod, and yeah, it's going to be a good episode. Finally have spring weather here. It's 85 today, so that was the first day over 80 we've had all year. So feels like spring and summer's on the way.
We had one day of summer on Monday. It got up to, I think it might have touched 70, maybe even a little bit higher inland, but then right back down to the rainy, dreary, gloomy, normal April, May weather the last 2 days, where it's 50 and rain off and on, didn't see the sun for, you know, the last 72 hours. Yeah, it's been a very up and down. Great baseball weather for sure. Yeah, not. But should only get better and better from here on out, knock on wood. But can't escape the injury still. You got G-Rod on the IL. Trout, unfortunately, out again. Just never ending. But we're talking prospects today for the entire show. A couple call-ups over the last few days. We'll hit on those. And some prospects, risers, and followers. Chris just finished putting out his updated prospect rankings. Mine are starting to come out today and over the next couple of days. So we figured we talk some players that have moved up or down over the first month of the season. A lot of fun names. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us, including all of our rankings that are always on there. And make sure you check out all the other great things going on over at Rotoballer. Use the code Toolshed, get you 10% off any premium package. A lot of great stuff on there, content, tools. A lot of fun stuff to help you win and have fun this fantasy season. You can see all that over at rotoballer.com. All right, Chris, let's hit on the two notable prospect promotions. We already touched on Joey LoProfito last episode as he got called up, or the news broke of his call up, like right before we came on to record that episode. So if you missed our analysis on him, check out episode 302. But today we got Beck and Black, Jordan Beck and Tyler Black. And all three of these guys, including LoProfito, got their first major league hit on the same day on Tuesday. That was pretty cool to see. Beck and Black each had two hits in their major league debut. Both went 2-for-4. So that's always cool to see. Yeah, very different profiles here, Chris. Black being a elite OBP guy throughout his minor league career. You're looking at in 238 minor league games, a little bit over 1,000 plate appearances, 412 OBP. Also hit 281, had 76 steals, caught 21 times, only 28 home runs. Some sneaky power in there. A lot of that came last year when he had 18. You know, I don't think he's ever going to be more than, you know, probably a 15-ish homer guy. But even at that level, with what he can provide elsewhere with his, you know, high level of contact, elite OBP skills, and solid ability on the base pass, there's some sneaky value here, especially he's going to be playing some first base. That's where he was playing a lot this season, 18 games at first, only one at the hot corner, and the rest were at DH. Be a pretty fun profile at a position that you usually don't get a lot of speed from.
Yeah, I think that's the real benefit of rostering a player like Tyler Black, is just that it's a unique profile. And I think some may say he's like versatile, but he's a corner. Like, I don't think he's going to play outfield. I don't think he's going to play third base or second base. Like, he may play a little third, but this is a first base profile, maybe even a DH type. Just the glove's not there at all, which does matter, I think, knowing which position you're going to get. Black doesn't hit the ball hard, but he gets home runs because he has really ideal launch angles. Like, he hits the ball at ideal angles consistently. It leads to barrels, but running an average EV below 85 miles an hour and a 9th percentile at 102 so far this year, but the barrel rate's still at 9.5%, just given the fact that, yeah, he hits at ideal angles. The contact is where it's at. The chase rate's low. He's going to get on base a ton. He's a great OBP play. But the contact rate, 85.5%, in the end zone at 90%, is really solid. I think these, we've had three big prospects called up in Beck, Loperfido, who we talked about last episode, and Black. And I actually think that Tyler Black probably has the best chance to succeed right away in the majors, just given his high floor. We know that those contact type profiles usually hit the ground running. And I think that this could probably be the case with Tyler Black, is that it's such a high floor that I'm pretty confident that he can step right in and perform, unlike some other guys who could step in and see some struggles, just given the contact concerns that they may have. And not that Loperfido and Beck have major contact concerns. We will talk about Beck, but yeah, I think Black just such a high floor to hit.
Yeah, I'd say he has the safest floor and best chance of immediate impact. Maybe doesn't have quite the same upside as Beckett and Profito do, but I like all three of these guys. I have all three ranked fairly close together. I think they're about like 15 spots apart in my overall. I do have Black last of the three, but I've picked up both of them in various leagues, and then the rest I'll have to wait until this weekend's Fab runs. But if you play on Yahoo, Black is eligible at second and third right now.
Yeah,
on Yahoo, and that's awesome. So you can throw him at middle, at corner, if you have those spots in your league. That's very handy to have. And Beck is, I'd say, the highest upside. It might be Beck. He has plus or better power, solid speed as well, can walk, does have some contact concerns. Not to the point where it's worrisome. It'll probably always be maybe a bit below average, but never to the point where it's a crater. And unless you see him hitting 220, at least I don't think so. I don't project him ever being like a super low batting average guy, but especially in Coors too. So if he can hit, say, like 260, 270 in that range at Coors, this is a potential 30 homer bats. This is, he can steal 15 to 20 bags and provide a solid OBP as well. Like this year, he had 18 walks and 121 plate appearances, 405 OBP, career 380 OBP guy. Him and Loperfido have their solid OBP as well. And yeah, I think Beck's going to play a ton. Black should. Chris said he's got to get first base or DH. Then they're rolling out Jake Bowers, which is, we all knew that experiment wasn't going to last long. And they can, between first base and DH, have Hoskins and Black go back and forth. Gets one of them out in the field, the other one's at DH, vice versa. So I think that's going to be the path for him. And then Beck in the outfield for Colorado. So I think they're both potentially impact guys. Who knows for sure? We've seen so many guys better than these two, like Jackson Holliday, for example, Wyatt Langford have struggled so far in the major league. So nothing's a sure thing by any means for any prospect. These are all top 40 guys for me. So these are guys I'd be looking to add right now if you haven't already, and if they're still out there, unless you play in a super shallow league, I think they can have some value for sure. All right, moving over to our prospect risers and followers here. We got 12 names total, 4 followers and 8 risers. Let's start with the followers here. First name on the list is Termar Johnson. And Chris, I think you dropped him pretty far in your rankings. I think even further. I dropped him too, but I think you dropped him even further. This is a guy that's always had a pretty interesting profile. It's been a ever-changing profile. You know, he was high hits, and then he tried to sell it for power. It's been always changing with him, and I don't know if it's for the good either. Still gets on base at a high clip, but outside of that, you're not really sure like what the finished product is going to look like in a year or two down the road when he gets closer to being up there with Pittsburgh. So Now, what are you thinking right now with Tamar Johnson? What's your outlook, and where do you have him ranked at this point?
Yeah, he's a very hard one for me. I've seen him now three different individual series for multiple games, and I've never come away impressed. I have seen him hit a couple home runs. Like, he's got the pop. I've got a couple videos out there of him hitting home runs, and still, it's not impressive. He is selling out for power. It's a massive leg kick. It's a lot of moving parts. This past series, when Greensboro was here in Greenville, there was a scouting report out on him. Now, David Sandlin didn't have it the first at bat, because to open up the game on Sunday, Tamar did hit a home run opposite field. It was 98 mile an hour fastball up, and Tamar hit it oppo. But other games in the series, he was getting breaking ball. He was swinging and missing at every one. Legit, he had multiple at bats where he would get three breaking balls and swing and miss at all of them. So that's a legitimate concern that I have, is just the contact ability. For someone that was billed as such a high hit tool guy as a prep, he hasn't had it. Last year, the contact rate, 67%. That's well below average. We're talking about somebody that they called a 70 grade hitter coming out of high school. This year, we're at a 59% contact rate. That's atrocious. So here's the deal with Johnson. I think this is a learning lesson for a lot of us, is that there's a lot of prep players that they're just hard to evaluate, man. Some guys hit that we didn't expect to hit. A lot of guys we expect to hit bust. Just look at the recent crop. And I know there's been successes, but Tamar Johnson, Drew Jones, Elijah Green, like, it's hard to transition from high school ball to the pros without, and for us to evaluate, like, we don't have like good concrete data for contact skills, because these guys, how advanced they are, of course, are going to dominate high school competition. It's just what it is. They get in, they face good pitching, and things change. Tamar is a really tough one. And it's weird to see him sell out for power, but it's not working. He's not making near enough contact. And honestly, that concerns me a ton. So it's just the whiffs on breaking balls are so bad that I think he's going to get eaten up on it until he fixes that problem. I'm pretty out here. And I think that he's almost out of my top 100 at this point, because I just don't see it. I've seen him enough live to have a pretty good feel where I don't know. I don't feel good about the profile at all.
Yeah, and we said he sold out for power. It's not like he like hit a ton of home runs last year when he sold out for power. Yeah, the power went up. It was all right. But he wasn't on the 40 homer pace. He wasn't slugging like 600 or anything like that. Yeah, it increased, but there was a much more drastic fall off in other parts of his game that more than negated the power increase. So I still have no freaking idea what Tamar Johnson is going to be. I was lower than most on him. I posted over the offseason, and we go through all of our positional rankings, this and that. And when I posted my second base prospects, I had him, I forget what it was, like 6 or 7, something like that. And I caught a lot of slack for that. He wasn't like top 3 or 4. But that's why I had these concerns. I'm like, all right, we've seen him go one end of the spectrum into the other. And neither end of the spectrum has been really that great. When he's never hit for, you know, hit a ton of contact. He's never really had a lot of power. And he's struggling to find that middle ground. And I don't know if that middle ground is going to be an impactful player. Do I think he's going to make it to the major leagues? Sure. Yeah. I think so. But is he going to be impactful? Is this Nick Gonzalez 2.0 here? I know they're different profiles, so it's not a direct comp, but it's another high upside, or what we thought was a high upside middle infield prospect that has fizzled out. And I'm not saying it's completely over for Nick Gonzalez, but I think he's actually hitting well in AAA right now. But I don't know. I'm just never been super high on Johnson. And yeah, I'm continuing to fade him. And I don't think I have him in my 100 anymore. I think he's not far out of it, but yeah, I can only have him 104. I think that's a fair spot. I think give or take 10, 15 spots either way from 100 is pretty fair for him right now. And yeah, he's definitely trending down for sure. Another guy trending down even quicker right now is Drew Jones from the Arizona Diamondbacks, who we talked about, I think 4 or 5 episodes ago, I believe it was, and he still hasn't gotten any better since then. We're looking at in 17 games for low A Visalia, 237, 352, 373. Another guy that's getting on base at a solid clip. He's got a 352 OBP, 10 walks in those 72 plate appearances, but striking out a ton, 29 times, which equates to a 40.3% K rate. Yeah, it's early, but strikeouts are a big problem for him right now, and he's just not impacting the ball, and he's not even running a lot. You know, he's got the speed, the athleticism, defense, got those traits from his father, but the bat is just not there right now, and he's still very young, though. I'm not saying I'm like out on Drew Jones by any means. He's still only 20 years old. We got to remember that. There's still a lot of developmental time left for him, but these are questions that surrounded him in the draft a couple of years ago, and they really haven't been improved upon. You got to wonder, is this ever a guy that's going to impact the ball enough to be a guy that's providing an impact for fantasy managers? He's also outside my 100, maybe even outside my 150. Let me see where I have him. At this moment, I have him at 194. I just have a lot of questions right there. So maybe that's a little too drastic of a fall off. He was 108 last update, so he's fallen about 80-something spots. A lot of questions here, Chris, but where do you have Drew Jones? How far has he dropped in your rankings?
You're not too low on him at all. I'm at 270.
Okay, so yeah, he's further than me.
Yeah, he's a borderline drop out of the 500 type if he doesn't show something soon. Elijah Green's out of my 500. Jones is about to do the same. This is really bad. I thought in the offseason he would put in some work on the swing. Looks terrible. It looks incredibly bad right now. When he does make contact, he's doing zero damage at all. He's hitting the ball on the ground. He's not giving himself any chance. It is a major concern for me looking at this profile. Yeah, I'm rather out. And unfortunately, it's another one where I think I'm just going to be playing it even more cautious with these prep guys in FYPDs, given the risk. Like, you just don't know how it's going to translate. And ultimately, it's been really bad for Jones, and it's hard to see it getting better at the moment. It's a moment, yeah, it's not a good outlook. I don't think post 200 is low at all.
So I was looking at that. I just put the 2022 draft. The top 10 picks in that draft, three have fared out pretty well, and then the other seven have gone the opposite way. So the three that have panned out well, Jackson Holliday, obviously. And then you have Cade Horton, one of the top pitching prospects in the minor leagues, and Brooks Lee, who is top 100 prospect, maybe even top 50 for some people. Then the other seven in that top 10. At two was Drew Jones. Three was Kumar Rocker. Four was Turner Johnson. Five was Elijah Green, six, Jacob Berry, nine, Gavin Cross, and 10, Gabriel Hughes. A very mixed bag of that top 10. The rest of that first round was pretty good. You got guys like Jet Williams, Lesko, DeLauder, Owen Murphy, Spencer Jones, Noah Schultz, Xavier Isaac, etc. But that top 10, there's a lot of misses in that top 10 and only a few hits there. But that's the beauty of baseball. It's fun to watch these guys develop and see their careers take different paths. And especially with these, you know, high school guys, like Chris mentioned, it's just such a mixed bag. Like four of the first five picks in that draft were all high school bats. And then you got Kumar Rocker right in the middle. And three of those four bats have not panned out whatsoever. And one looks really good. That's what you get. Very much a mixed bag. But all right. Who we got next on the list here? Oh, yeah. Adiel Amador from the Colorado Rockies. A guy that, now, I was pumping the Amador's underrated drum in the offseason because the hit tool, obviously one of the better hit tools in the minor leagues. I think he was actually one of two that to get a 70 grade on his hit tool by Baseball America, along with Jackson Holliday, obviously. But it's just been a very, you know, mediocre start to the season for him in Double-A Hartford, slashing 167, 375, 185. But he has 10 steals. Nearly double as many walks as strikeouts, 16-9. Still has that good OBP, but just doing nothing with the bat. The rest of his game, the approach, base running, he's doing all that, but just doing absolutely nothing with the sticks. This is a guy that you think will get it going. He hit 287 last year, 292 in 2022, and 299 in 2021. So he's had 3 years of hitting and making a lot of contact, more walks to strikeouts. And I thought there'd be enough power speed. And then when you factor in cores, maybe he's 15 to 20 in both categories. Not a lot, but serviceable if you're going to throw in high average, high OBP. But now it's like, is that even going to happen? I had him top 20. He's now fallen into the 40s for me. And I think I'm pretty sure I'm still higher on him than you, Chris. So where is Amador fallen for you? Is he still even top 100 for you?
Yeah, he is. Not like completely out on him. But I will say the fatal flaw in his game is that he has no lift at all in his swing. And it's, we talked about this before, like guys just really change their launch angles. And if they do, what is the expense? What are they giving up to do? And I think that while Amador, I still believe his contact is elite, it's still some of the best contact in all of baseball, which is it's pretty high praise when you look at it. Last year, those numbers were certainly there with Amador, and nothing's really changed this year. His contact rate is identical. 87.5% is an elite number. The end zone contact rate's over 90% both years, but it doesn't matter because he's not doing damage. He can't lift the ball, and that's my concern. Yeah, he's still in bases. That's obviously fun. He's getting on base, but we're talking about an ISO of 0.019 right now.
Is that good?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I could do that. Yeah, I'm just kidding. I couldn't do that.
Maybe. I don't know. 0.019 is not that high of a bar.
No. If you put me in AA, yeah, I'd probably strike out a lot more than 12.5% of the time. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, Amador is going to put the ball in play. But here's the issue. Ground ball rates. Last year in high A, 55.9%, and that was when he had a really good stretch. Go to AA, 59.3%. This year in AA, 67.4%. That is not going to play. And to correct that, highly difficult. So I think that, yeah, I've got him at 43, and that still may be a little high. Honestly, probably deserves to drop a little bit further. I know it's a small sample of non or bad performance, but that ground ball rate, guys, look at players, prospects that can't lift the ball. Like, this is something I'm doing more and more. Ground ball rates kill fantasy production. Look at Vlad. Vlad has elite upside.
I was just about to say, look at Vlad. Yep. Yeah.
Can't lift the ball. And take it for what it's worth. Amador's fun, good contact, but I'm not sure how much he actually taps into that.
So you said the ISO was 0.019? So I don't know why it made me look at this. The career ISO for notorious great hitter Bartolo Colon was 0.023. Amador's ISO is currently lower than El Bartolo Colon, who had a 0.084 batting average and a 1.07 slug in his career with that one mythical home run at 43 years old, which might be the best home run in the history of the game. Just saying. But one more follower here, Ethan Salas, who is still 18-year-old in high A, so we got to preface it with that. Currently slashing .219, .346, .281, has yet to hit a home run in 78 plate appearances. Still walking at a decent clip. OBP is still solid. But with Salas, I think, and let me preface this by saying that I still think he's going to be a good or very good player at the major league level. You see the skills with Salas. It's, if you watch him for 5 seconds, it's not that hard to see. But I also think that Salas is one of the most overranked player for fantasy focused prospect rankings. I've seen him put in top tens, which is absolutely just bonkers to me. I have him currently in the 70s, and I think that is fair. Obviously, a lot of room for that to go up, but just looking at the profile, and taking out the fact that he made it to AA at 17, and let's look at the profile. Like, all right, maybe he's above average hit, above average power. Okay, great. And he's obviously defensively, he could be one of the best auto catchers in the game. That upside is definitely there. But there's so many other catchers that have that type of profile for offense that are much lower in prospect rankings or have higher upside than that offensively. I don't get why he's ranked so highly. Again, very talented player potentially down the road. Like, the ingredients are there. We'll see if it comes together. But for fantasy purposes, I'm not talking about real life, fantasy purposes, I think he is just ranked way too highly right now.
He's an interesting one. I think he's a very interesting talking point. He obviously rates incredibly high on real life list, and what he did last year was insanely impressive. It's weird to look at his birthday and see 06 on the player page. It's absolutely nuts, but 17 years old, 11 months. He'll turn 18 on June the 1st. I think the Padres got a little aggressive here. They pushed him to double A last year. I know to end the year, he didn't perform there. He was good in single A. He didn't get enough sample in high A to even really know. And now this year back in high A, he is striking out a little more. He's being more patient, which obviously walking more, working deeper in accounts is hurting him. But considering everything that he did last year, guy ran a 77.5% contact rate and 85% end zone and a chase rate below 20%, which is pretty impressive for somebody that was 16 and 17 last year. He has taken a hit in contact this year. That rate's down around 66%. So that's a little bit lower. The EVs were good last year too. So yeah, I think this is a lot of projection. He's really good behind the plate, which benefits him. Good arm, good in the field, very good catching prospect. He's tough because right now he is fading a bit. Do I think he rebounds? Absolutely. I think that still you can probably trade him and get pretty good value considering how high he is on other real life lists. Yeah, I think that if we just look, I don't know where anybody else has him, but I'm going to look at Pipeline. Like Pipeline is like MLB Pipeline is like probably the most universally used list, I would guess, for real life. He's number 7 on that list. FanGraphs top 100. They have Ethan Salas 5. So Longenhagen, very high
baseball,
on him.
Baseball America has him at 9.
9, okay. So all the major outlets have him very high. So, yeah, you can get something good for him. He's number 3, by the way, on The Athletic, which is Keith Law's list. You can trade him and still get something. Just utilize those lists if you wanted to because, man, there's a lot of value to be had. Catchers in Fantasy 2 are weird. Like, the production fluctuates. And so I think there's an opportunity to trade him, and I might look to do so and capitalize on those very high real-life rankings.
Oh, absolutely. Use those to your advantage all the time. Yeah, I've seen others do that. Just don't use my own list against me, and that happens in my own home keeper league. But this feels weird that, and I looked at, so Ethan Salas was born June 1st, 2006. So it feels weird that I'm now like writing about, talking about, analyzing prospects that were born after my home keeper league started. So we started in the 2006 season, obviously a couple months before June 1st. But man, it's weird to see that. Yeah, 2006, like you mentioned. But yeah, like I said, I think he's going to be very good, like obviously very good all-around player, but ranking him for fantasy, I think he's going to misrank right now. This is my two cents. I definitely think he's a sell high. He's still, even though he got the double A last year, obviously they have him back in high A now. I don't think they're going to do any massive, drastic things with him this year. I think, like, all right, let's just settle in, have some time in high A Fort Wayne, and then probably move back up to San Antonio later in the year, and maybe he's up next year. But I don't think they're going to continue to do what they did last year with him. So I don't think he's going to be up this year or anything like that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, moving over to the risers now. We got eight on the list here, starting with Lazaro Montes, who people have called Baby Yordan at times. Similar body, so he's got that going for him, and one of the more exciting hitters in the minor leagues. He's 6'3", 210, still only 19 and a half years old. He won't be 20 until late October, later this year. Last year, hit 303, 440, 560. 13 home runs and 19 doubles in 70 games, nearly split between the complex level and low A Modesto. He's repeating low A Modesto here. He only had 33 games, but 20 games so far, 281, 388, 463. Only three home runs so far. Nearly as many walks as strikeouts, 13 to 15 there, and improved contact rates as well. The surface stats might not be gaudy, but he's starting to make some improvements that are pretty encouraging, Chris.
Yeah, that's really the big thing here, is that he's making contact improvements. And yeah, you know, I really didn't think that the contact could be there. And that was always my concern, is that is Lazaro Montes going to make enough contact for the power to play up? The Baby Yordan comps weren't relevant at all, considering he didn't make contact. Last year, he ran a 66% contact rate, which isn't good. This year, however, that rate's jumped pretty significantly up to a 74% clip, which is really good. Like that, to me, that kind of improvement for a young player that's as big as he is, I'll take that all day long and be very happy with it. So Montes is somebody that I'm much more in on, and I moved up. Like I was holding out because I didn't think that he would make enough contact. Really didn't. And everybody said, oh, I saw it was coming. Dude, the dude ran a 66% contact rate last year. You didn't see them, the contact rates jumping like that. And so given the gains, I am more in on them. I'm curious if they stick, because they've been trending downward in the recent days. So if you looked at a rolling chart of the contact rate, it is going in the wrong direction. So was it an early season mirage? I think it's still to be determined, but I am pretty interested to see where everything lands for Lazaro Montes, who has looked much improved this year.
Now, where do you have him in your rankings, Chris?
He's at 33, so okay. That's a pretty big jump for me. I was in the 60s before.
I currently have him at 26, so only a little bit higher. But this is a massive glob, so I might tinker with this section of my rankings a little bit more before I post them on Thursday. So a big glob there. But speaking of improved contact, Chris, Bemelec Ortiz has done that as well this year. Another one where the surface stats don't really stand out. They're fine. 260, 333, 455 slash. And we know he has big power. We saw that last year. 33 home runs and a 619 slug with a 325 ISO in 109 games between low A and high A as a 21-year-old. But another one where we were like, all right, we know the power's there, but you know, can he keep the strikeout rate in check? Can he make enough contact? And he's made those improvements this year.
Yeah, the improvements are very good. And Ortiz's numbers were stellar last year. Outside of the contact was the big question mark with Bemelec Ortiz. Would he make enough contact to make the profile really work? And it was a contact rate around 80% last year. So 80%. It was 70% last year. It's up to near 81% this year, which is a massive jump. Like no prospect in my top 250 has had a contact jump like he has so far. That's notable to me because everything else under the hood resembled like a Xavier Isaac and Lazaro Montes when you look at power. The chase rate is the only thing. Like Isaac's very patient. Isaac has him in chase rate, but ideal launch angles for days with Ortiz, like really good sweet spot percentage. Last year is an average EV of 90 and a ninth percentile of 106, which right in line with Xavier Isaac and even near Montes. Montes had a little bit of a higher ninth percentile last year, but the contact rates were 70 overall and 78% in zone. To see that overall contact rate jump like it has is huge. I can't express that enough. It's going to come around. Like I didn't even mention the box score stats look fine. Ortiz is going to start getting to more power. The contact is going to really play up. And I think that it's going to be really good profile. So if you like Xavier Isaac, like, I'd also look at this guy. He's really good.
I have him ranked a little bit higher. I like both him and Isaac, but I've been pretty consistently, you know, they've been about 20-ish spots apart for the most part, with Ortiz usually ahead, and he remains ahead now. So, yeah, I like him a lot. I have no idea where he's going to fit in with Texas. They already have a log jam up there as it is, but I like the bat. There's a trade. You know, I'm not worried about that too much right now. But just looking at the bats, improve contact, go with that power. Yeah, this guy looks like he could be, if everything clicks, a middle-of-the-order impact bat. Moving over to Toronto now with Aurelvis Martinez, the guy we talked about a lot over the years on this podcast. Been a fun talking point over the last several years. Right now, slashing .295, .356, 624 games for AAA Buffalo, 8 doubles and 7 home runs. This is a guy that needs to have the bat there, both in terms of average and power, to be an impact guy, because he doesn't run and he's one of those weird middle infielders that gives you really a zero in the stolen base department. And he shifted over to second base this year, making a lot of errors. I think that's probably why he's not up yet, because he already has 7 errors in 20 games at the position. So needs to actually legit improve his defense, not like the BS reason they give other prospects to keep them down. But bat's been there, Chris. He's finally, it's something I've been looking for from him for a while now. I was like, all right, do it both at the same time. Hit for average and hit for power at the same time. And he's doing so far. But I guess, do you think it sticks long term?
I do. The improvements have been consistently good. And at the end of the day, like, it feels like Aurelvis has been around forever. Like, he feels like he's been such a long-term prospect, but yeah, it really hasn't been. He's still so young. He's just 22, and he'll be 22 the entire season. So I'm rather in. I think he's on fire right now. There's been improvements in the contact. He's consistently cut the K rate, which is notable. Yeah, I do think that the defense is bad, but and I think Aurelvis is a well-deserved riser, and I'm very excited to see when he does get the call up to Toronto.
I think it's still fairly soon, but I think if he was showing better defense at second base, he'd probably be up now, because that offense has been sputtering for the most part. And at a bat like him, they've already called it a barger. So I think Martinez isn't too far behind. But yeah, I think I'm not going to go like super crazy on him. I don't think he's, personally, I don't have him as like a top 50 prospect, because I'm still where is the average and power at long term. I think he could be like a solid middle infielder long term. Guy that can maybe hit you 270, 20, 25 home runs, something like that. I don't think he's going to be like a 30 plus guy. Maybe he could. The power is there, so maybe he could. I'm a little low on that, but he needs both those to be there to be an impactful guy. And we'll see if that continues. It certainly has this year so far, that's for sure. Going a little bit further down in the minor leagues right now, going to Aiden Miller with the Philadelphia Phillies, currently down in low A Clearwater, 13 games, started that season, slashing .309, .371, .491, 6 extra base hits, 2 home runs, 6 walks to 12 strikeouts, and also stealing 7 bags as well. I mean, this is a guy that was pretty trendy FYPD pick after like the elite guys, one of the more high upside guys in that draft class. And I think he's being slept on a little bit right now. I mean, I've seen a lot of other rankings where they don't have him ranked super highly, but this is a guy that I have shooting up pretty quickly at my rankings right now. I made a tweet not too long ago that I think he could be top 25 for fantasy purposes by the end of the season. Is this a guy that has potential to hit for a good average, plus or better raw power, and can run a little bit too? He might be like a 8 to 10 steal guy to add to a solid average and maybe a 30 homer bat down the road. We'll see how the body fills out. He doesn't have a lot of projection on the frame. He's already fairly filled out for his age, very strong for his age already. So I think there's a lot of upside here, and I think the perceived value still hasn't caught up to that. So he's a great buy in my opinion, and a guy, again, that I think could be top 25 by end of the year, and I've already moved him up inside my top 75 in this update.
Yeah, I know. He's really solid. Across the board, I think that Miller's an interesting player. You look, he makes a ton of contact, which is really encouraging to see from a player his frame. He actually doesn't hit the ball. Like, his Statcast data right now is not, like, off the charts by any means, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be able to. I think that he will get to enough power. There is raw power in the profile. So far this year, 2 home runs. He has 7 steals, which is interesting to see him running. Yeah, I'm curious to see if that sticks long term because the speed really isn't there, but the field of hit is, the plate discipline is, the barrel rate's a little low. There are some ground ball issues, but they really weren't there last year. So I'm curious if this sticks. Like we saw so far the ground ball rate in last year was a small sample. So we're looking at a pretty similar sample size at this point from last year. This year, 29.6% up to 53.5%. So obviously a trend you don't want to see continue. So if that continues, I'm going to have a little more concerns. But right now, contact's there. Everything else looks good in the profile. I like Aiden Miller a good bit.
Next name on the list here, Jefferson Rojas with the Chicago Cubs. 19-year-old currently in high A and just turned 19 about a week ago on April 25th. So a very young 19 with a pretty aggressive assignment, though. He did have 70 games in low A last year, so it wasn't like they skipped a level or anything like that. They've been pretty aggressive with him so far, and he's responded. He hasn't put up the gaudy stats yet, even this year. He's hitting .325, only 2 home runs in 19 games. Does have 4 steals, though. .375 OBP, .450 slug. A lot of people rave about Jefferson Rojas. I forget who it was. Someone said that he's everything that Cubs fans wanted Christian Hernandez to be. And again, he's been very impressive for a young player at every level so far. And I think he's another one that gets a little undervalued because the stats haven't been gaudy. So he gets, and that's dinged a little bit. Again, the perceived value gets held in check, so to speak. And I think he's a good dynasty buy right now.
Yeah, for sure. I do think it's a good time to buy. It's a really good profile. I was so impressed last year when I saw him live with Myrtle Beach. It was a killer profile. Advanced body, advanced glove, really good bat, field of hit. So yeah, I look at a profile like Rojas, and I think his stock's going to soar universally soon. So I think it's now is a good time to get in before the whole community is in on him. I think that's already happening, but I think he's also going to bump to double A pretty soon because it's such an advanced bat. So yeah. I'm very excited about the outlook on Jefferson Rojas.
And he's one where the fact that there's so many other good names that are ranked higher than him for the most part in this system, he flies under the radar. Even I just filtered my own rankings to just the Cubs, and I have him as the 7th best prospect on the Cubs right now, or in the system, I should say. It means they got Matt Shaw, Cade Horton, PCA, Owen Casey, Kevin Alcantara, James Triantos. So there's a lot of good names, even Moises Ballesteros, who I have behind, but some probably have ahead. The fact that all this talent, and he's flown under the radar a little bit, but like you mentioned, you know, that's coming to an end. More and more people are getting in on Rojas. So while the value has steadily climbed, yeah, I'm really in agreement with you, Chris, that I think it's going to start climbing even more so as the 2024 season progresses. And I think you could say the same thing about this guy here. This next guy will stick right in the National League Central with Cam Collier from the Cincinnati Reds, who's only a little bit older, a few months older. He just turned 19 back in late November, also at high A. And he already has more home runs this year in 20 games than he did all of last year in 111 games. 6 last year, 7 so far this year, .298, .326, .607 slash line. Not walking a ton. Last year, he had a walk rate well over 10%. This year, still early, but only the 4 walks in 89 plate appearances. But really finally tapping into that power that had a lot of people pretty indecisive on him. There was the camp that really believed that the power would be there and the camp that thought the power projections were overrated. So he's done a great job in trying to silence those critics so far. So he's moved up. He was in like the 125 range pretty consistently for me. Now he's well within my top 100. But Chris, do you think that power is going to stick? And how high up the rankings has he climbed for you?
Yeah, he's moving up for sure. Probably not moving him up enough at this point, but I think there's potential to move up even further. He is inside the top 100, but yeah, it's been such a good start to the year so far. Hitting near 300, he's not getting on base at a super high clip, but he's hitting so many bombs. He's hitting everything he sees out of the park, 7 home runs in 20 games is just crazy. The power's always been there. That's never really been the question. And so when you look at the profile, here's what's changed is that he is getting a little more lift in general. He is still hitting too many balls on the ground. Last year was 53%. This year, 46.3%. The ultimate thing that's changed, though, the infield fly ball rate was really bad last year. So some poor pop-ups at 30%. This year, that's dropped, and he's hitting more healthy fly balls and healthy fly balls to the pool side. Collier's pulling the ball at a 7% higher clip, therefore getting some more poolside power and home runs. Yeah, I think that at the end of the day, like, this is a profile that's always going to have a lot of power. The contact, like, how much contact does he get to? The contact rates are up this year, which is good. Contact rates were good last year too, but this year, seeing some improvements, I'm very in. I think it's still a good time to buy Cam Collier.
Yeah, for sure. That type of power bat, I mean, I was one that always believed in the power. I think neutral park, he's maybe like a 25-homer guy, but maybe a guy that could get over 30 in Great American Ballpark. We'll see if he's still with the team then. They're another team that has so many good young players, especially on the offensive side. So we'll see how that all shakes out. He's still a couple years away from being in the major leagues. Like, I wouldn't even put it, probably ETA of 2026 on Collier, maybe late 2025, but still a lot of time to figure that out. And yeah, definitely a name turning up for sure. Next one here, we'll keep it in the state of Ohio, go over from Cincinnati to Cleveland with Jason Chirio. What do you know? Another Chirio rising up prospect rankings. This one not quite as quick as Jackson, but Jason won't turn, he'll turn 19 pretty soon here in the middle of May, but one that's having a very good season to start the year in low A Lynchburg. 276, 475 OBP, 483 slug. Has six doubles, two home runs, eight steals, and nearly double as many walks as strikeouts, 20 to 11 there. A guy that's a very good athlete, Chris. The speed is, we all knew the speed was there, and he showed a good feel to hit. But the power is still the X factor. I'm not saying that he's had a massive uptick in power this year, but where that power winds up will be the ultimate X factor for him and determine if he's a good player or maybe even a great player. We'll see, but the arrow here is absolutely trending up right now.
100%. He's looked really good so far. Very fun hitter, high contact, speed. And you looked at the body, and you're like, all right, there's some projection here that he's going to add more power. And that's what we're seeing so far. He's still 18. He'll be 19 later this month, but still to see an 18, 19-year-old doing this. The plate discipline's off the charts, and he's almost too passive in a way where he's not swinging enough. And so more swings would probably be good. He'd get more balls in play, potentially get more balls to leave the yard, but he already has more home runs this year than he has his entire career between the DSL in 2022 and then the complex in single A last year. Has six doubles as well. Not striking out a ton. He's walked double as much or twice as much as he's struck out, which is crazy. Very successful on the base paths as well. This is a really fun profile with a chance to really take off, in my opinion. So I'm in on Chirio for sure. He's a top 100 prospect, in my opinion.
Yep, I have him right there. I have him at 98 right now. So definitely there with you. One more name on the list before we get out of here, and that's Colby Thomas, currently in double A within the Oakland Athletics organization. Just turned 23, so he's one of those quote-unquote older prospects that often get undervalued, and that's absolutely the case here. And I was even guilty of that as well. Not anymore. I moved him way up my prospect rankings. I have him inside my top 150 now, off to a great start, 318, 379, 588 in 95 plate appearances, six doubles, five home runs, eight steals. And I tweeted this on the 30th of April, so I'm not sure if anybody else has joined this little club yet. But as of April 30th, three prospects had five-plus home runs and five-plus steals in the minor leagues. Two were just promoted to the majors in Jordan Beck and Joey Loprafito. And then the other was Colby Thomas with those five home runs and eight steals that I mentioned. A guy that always had that nice power-speed blend, but another one where kind of question where would the contact wind up. And right now, he's definitely making some strides there as well. So, Chris, like, when do you think we see Colby Thomas? You think it's later this year? Obviously not a whole lot standing in his way in Oakland, obviously. And what type of player do you think he's going to be long-term?
he's an extra base hit machine. It was really just the contact skills. They are trending downward a little bit, but it's still a major improvement from last year. Still up 4.5 percentage points for a contact rate, which is good. Still hitting well over 300. It's cut the strikeout rate 8.5 percentage points at this point. He just puts a lot of balls in play, makes a lot happen at the plate, hits for power. Yeah, Thomas is fun. I think he had 63 extra base hits last year, if I'm not mistaken, with 18 homers. It's off the charts good, and he steals too, so he's already up to 8 stolen bases. Last year, he stole 25. This could be a potential 2020-type bat. He was really good at Mercer and then had those initial struggles with the contact when he came into the league. He's still young. He's still 23 years old, a young 23. Spent the entire year as a 23-year-old. I think that he's only been in AA for 21 games, so I'd guess that he gets some consistent run in AA. Maybe he bumps to AAA after the All-Star break. And from there, who knows what happens? I doubt that the Athletics get super aggressive with him. They could. You never know what they're going to do, to be honest. So it's not a real possibility he debuts this year. But yeah, at the end of the day, like, this is it's actually a really fun fantasy bat that probably plays a lot better for fantasy than real life purposes. But Thomas can mash, that's for sure. And he's going to provide a lot for fantasy teams. It just comes down to contact. Can he make enough? And the gains this year suggest, all right, we're trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm still a little bit concerned. The strikeout, the walk rate has never been great. 20-5 this year, 146-37 last year. But yeah, absolutely. But 2020 bat, like, the above average power, above average speed is definitely there. 18 home runs, 25 steals last year. And yeah, 39 doubles as well. You mentioned this, a ton of extra base hits, already has 12 in 21 games this year. So yeah, I think he's being slept on a bit still. He's in Oakland. He's a little bit older. Those kind of all factor into it. But he's definitely a pretty fun profile and a name on the rise for sure. Was it Mercer? Didn't Kyle Lewis went to Mercer?
Kyle Lewis, yep, that's correct.
I don't think they overlap because, Thomas got there in 2020. And yeah, I think Lewis was drafted like 2018, 2019.
Lewis was a rookie of the year in 2020, so yeah, shortened year. So.
Yeah, so he was drafted in – oh, he's drafted in 2016. They were 4 years apart there. I thought it was like 2018 or so.
Ah, dude, blast from the past. Wow.
I don't know. Now I'm wondering where is – I know he's been hurt, but he was with – he had 16 games with Arizona last year. I wonder what he's up to this year. I'm going to go into a Kyle Lewis kind of rabbit hole here after we get off. But we are done here with another episode of The Tool Show. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with you again next week on Monday as usual. But until then, everyone take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.